This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. We are back now with part two of the congressional debate in the 50th Congressional District between Congressman Duncan Hunter, Republican, and his Democratic challenger, James Kimber. And if you missed part one, which was broadcast Friday on our show, you can find a podcast of it on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. In part two, the questions were posed by the audience in the debate, which was held at Cuyamaca College.
We're ready to move to round two, the audience-initiated questions. The first question picked from the audience questions will be given by Mr. Lynn and goes to Mr. Kimber.
Mr. Kimber, do you support the airstrikes against Iraq and Syria with ISIL, and do you support sending ground troops to either of these regions? What strategy do you support for dealing with ISIL terrorists?
The short answer is yes, I do support the airstrikes. I know Mr. Hunter did vote against it, and I actually understand his reasons for not wanting to arm rebels who we may end up having to fight someday with our own weapons and with our training. But the question is, if we're not going to do that, are we just going to sit by and let this happen? I mean, the rest of the world is looking to us for an answer and how we are going to respond to this problem. And we're now starting to build coalitions with the countries over there, the UAE, Qatar, Saudi Arabia. I do not support putting boots on the ground, though, ever. But I think the bigger question is, if you're not going to fund this, and again, I understand his reason for not doing it, but then what is your solution? Because to do nothing is not an answer or a solution. It's not just going to go away.
Sure. Mr. Hunter.
So I'm confused. Number one, the vote that we had in the House was about arming Islamic Syrians who were considered rebels. It was not about striking in Syria or striking in Iraq. It was about the U.S. giving our technology and our weapons and our tactics and our communications gear to Syrian moderates, which I would argue don't exist at all. That's what I voted against. You can't do that and not have boots on the ground either. If you're going to train them, it takes Americans to train them. And what we're doing right now is doing what happened in Iraq and doing what happened in Afghanistan. I am totally for bombing the hell out of ISIS, crushing them and wiping them off the face of the earth, okay? ISIS, but that doesn't mean that you take Americans and put them in to hold ground in Syria or in Iraq. That's absurd. You're not going to have American military holding ground, fending off Assad and ISIS and all of these different groups. Let me tell you, the last thing that you do when you have a bunch of crazy warring factions going at each other, the last thing you do is arm them. Trust me.
30-second rebuttal.
I don't disagree. Again, I don't advocate putting any boots or soldiers on the ground. I understand what your stance is, and I understand the need for people who are instructing, but I'm talking about actual people fighting. I don't support that.
Mr. Hunter?
Let me close with this on this issue. The real threat with ISIS isn't what's happening over there. They have no Navy. They have no intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear tips. They have no Air Force. The only way that they can touch us here is by crossing our land border, by coming into the United States and planning attacks on Americans in this country. If you want to stop ISIS and make sure that they don't attack us in the homeland, then you kill them where they are. But you also make sure they can't come in through our southern border, because that's where it's scary. I'll tell you. Out of time. That's what's important.
Hey, we had a question from the audience, which I didn't see the card right here, but I'm going to follow up with. I remember it regarding the southern border. The question began with Mr. Hunter and then go to Mr. Kimber. Since we have so many people in the United States who are undocumented, who've come in other ways than just to cross the border, people have come in visas and have stayed beyond their visas, is the southern border the number one line of defense we need to focus on, or do we really need to start looking at the people who are coming in through our airports, coming in through cruise ships, coming in through Canada, at least as much, if not more?
Absolutely. Yes.
So you prioritize that over the
elaborate on it. No, it needs to be done the same. You have thousands of people that have gotten visas, student visas into this country and working visas, who just disappear. You don't know who they are. We're the number one entry point in the United States in San Diego for Somalis. The Somalis in Somalia know the name of the federal judge that grants asylum here in San Diego. They know her name over there. Because everybody knows that if you want to sneak in here, if you want to get into the U.S., and if you want to harm Americans, that's how you do it. You cross the southern land border. But you do have those outstanding student visas. You have the outstanding travel visas. That all should have been fixed post 9/11. But it was not. You had this big monstrosity called Homeland Security created, which stops us all at the airport, but it does not make sure that people that are over here on visas have to go home on time. It does not make sure that people with student visas have to go home on time. And that's what needs to be fixed on this. And you got to have a system. You're going to talk southern border, like E-Verify, where you make sure that every single person working in this country is a United States citizen. That means we're all on the same playing field.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. Mr. Kimber, 1 minute.
I'm just curious about, so H.R. 2220, you sit on an immigration committee, immigration reform.
I don't actually.
Subcommittee or?
No.
It's listed on your website.
It's not. I'm on transportation and armed services.
Okay.
I'm not on immigration.
It's still on your website, your House website it is, as of yesterday.
Roger, Mr. Kimber.
Okay.
Whatever you
say. But I did hear you last year when I asked about immigration reform, and I've heard you talk a lot about border security, and I'm just curious, this bill, which has been sponsored by many of your colleagues, mostly the state border, so Texas, Arizona, California, and again, I know that's one of your big stances, border security, so what are you doing more about that? I mean, I've read the bill, and although, I mean, it's only sponsored by Republicans, there are many things in there I would support as well. The question is, since border security is one of your biggest stances, why haven't you as well as co-sponsored this, and why aren't you working with the Democrats? Because I know I've heard you say you don't want to talk about immigration until the border is secure. Okay, then what are you doing to secure the border?
30-second rebuttal, Mr. Hunter.
Yeah, sure. Number one, you can't just pull one of these bills. There's a whole lot of people doing a whole lot of things. I don't know what H.R. 2220 is. But if I was prepared for that, I could ask you some things that you probably don't know about too, right?
Sure.
So here's what I would say. If you just secure the border and you don't have anything in interior, meaning you have no interior security, you have no E-Verify system, just doing the southern border doesn't do anything. But if you secure the border first and you put in these systems, then the immigration debate kind of goes away. Because in that fantasy land, the border is secure forever, meaning in 10 years you're not going to have 20 million illegal aliens in this country that have come over, because the border is now secure. So then we can look at the immigration issues that we have. The problem with that House bill and other bills like it is that they don't put border security first. And I don't trust the Senate or the House of Representatives to put border security before the other types of amnesty that they want to put through. Security first, then we'll work on the immigration stuff.
Carson Hunter, I think you're going to like my next question. I wasn't going to ask this because it was similar to this question we had before, but I think there's a lot more we need to talk about in this one. So another question was, what is your solution to the problem of immigration in this country? Mr. Kimber.
You have 10 seconds.
No, good. Thank you. Okay.
That would be 15. Thank you.
Well, okay, to start, I do support DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. I mean, we have a lot of people that were brought up here not of their own volition, yet they've been educated in our schools, they've gone to our colleges, and I've heard people say, well, they've done it at the taxpayers' expense. So as Republicans say that they're very fiscally conservative, very fiscally responsible, why would you want to throw away that investment? I mean, these are people who have shown their passion to be an American, so I think you start with the children that are brought up here first. But, I mean, immigration reform in itself is not just a one fixed issue. I mean, there is H.R. 15, which a colleague of yours, Representative Dunham, has signed on to. It is a bipartisan bill which does deal with this. And he himself has stated that he believes in a pathway to citizenship. So he, too, lives in an area that is the demographics. There's a high Latino population in his district, as is in yours. So the question is, why aren't you doing more? Why haven't you signed on to that bill? I mean, we talk about bipartisanship.
Mr. Hunter.
You asked him how he would solve immigration, and he asked me a question.
Yes.
I still didn't hear the answer.
I support DACA.
So here's what you do. What you don't do is let people in line in front of people who want to become legal immigrants. That's what you don't do. You don't leave the southern border unsecured. That's what you don't do. You have to have a secure border. You have to have E-Verify. So once again, you can make sure that every single person working in this country is an American citizen. You have to go through all of those different waivers for visas and different visas and make sure that we don't have people here who want to harm Americans. The main point of border security right now, in my point of view, especially with ISIS, is national security. It's a national security issue. You worry about the immigration issue afterwards. But if you have a horrible event like 9/11, and it's not done by Americans, it's done by people who have overstayed visas or got here through the southern border, maybe then we can finally secure it and realize it is a national security issue. But that's how you fix it. Don't overcomplicate it. Secure the border. Have E-Verify implemented. Check out all of those visas. And it will sort itself out, and then we can work the immigration issue it's secure.
Okay. Your rebuttal?
I would disagree that it just sorts itself out. I mean, assuming a problem will just go away if you fix something else. I agree with the border security and E-Verify, but I don't know how that resolves certain problems. Again, to go back to the deferred action childhood arrivals, are you telling me that people who have been here since the age of 5 or 10 even, that they've gone through our schools, been educated, that they should get to the back of the line or go back to a country that they don't even know?
Mr. Hunter, you have 30 seconds.
Number one, you should make what you should want, because you're running for the House of Representatives, is you should want that debated in front of the American people by Congress and the House of Representatives. We did not debate that. That was a unilateral action done by this president that some have seen as illegal. The president doesn't get to say, this used to be against the law, but now it's okay. That is something that should have been discussed in light of day in front of the American people by Congress, and then we can vote on it, and then you could hold somebody up here accountable. Mr. Kimber just said it's okay. If the president does it, that's fine with me. I don't believe that.
Actually, no, that's not what I said. But
that's what happened with DACA.
2 years ago, the Speaker of the House.
We're moving on to our next question. Thank you, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. This will be to Mr. Hunter to begin. This area, this district in particular, is going to be impacted by what's going on in Iraq, probably more than any other place in the country because of the large Chaldean population that is here, and Iraqi Christians, one way or another, no matter what happens on the ground, there are going to be a lot of refugees. What should be the federal response to the crisis which is brewing right now and to the people who will be coming here looking for refuge from the crisis in Iraq?
Me first.
Starting with you.
Okay, number one, going again, you have to strike ISIS wherever they are all the time, and you're probably going to have to do it in perpetuity. Radical Islam will be a threat for me, for my kids, for their kids, in forever and ever. That's what radical Islam, you had somebody in Oklahoma chop off a woman's head today. Okay, that was an Islamist, a radical Islamist murder. You're going to face this forever. You're going to have to maintain a force there so we can kill the bad guys whenever possible and make sure that they can't attack us here. You have to give humanitarian aid to Kurdistan. Kurdistan's taken all these refugees, Jordan too. We owe them that through the World Health Organization and the UN. We ought to be providing some humanitarian relief. We ought to be arming Kurdistan. We ought to be arming the Peshmerga so that they can take these guys out on their own and you don't have to have American troops there. But that takes us supporting them. You got to put pressure on Turkey. Turkey should not be able to aid and abet the ISIS folks. You have ISIS folks going into Turkey, and this is not official reporting, but just word on the street that I have from the Kurdish community here. You ought not have ISIS folks getting help in Turkey, getting medical help in Turkey, and being able to rearm and refit and go back and fight from Turkey. So those are a few things I think that need to get done that don't include training more Syrians to fight other Syrians.
Mr. Kimber.
Okay. I understood the question, though, to be about what we're going to do about the refugees specifically. Okay. I know one of the things that can be done has to do with essentially the numbers that are assigned to who can come into this country. And part of it is those numbers apply to the whole family, whereas the numbers should just apply to the sponsor themselves, whereas their immediate family members are not included in that number. I know that certain local leaders are looking to raise that number, and I think part of the reason we created part of this problem, so we do owe these people. We are responsible for this. We need to take responsibility.
Mr. Hunter, 30-second response.
Sure. We have legislation that I'm already on, in fact, with Juan Vargas, a Democrat from South Bay, that does this. It raises the caps for Iraqi and Syrian asylees and Kurdish asylees, especially Christians, and people that are getting persecuted in that area. So we are doing that, and we recognize that there's a humanitarian need. But in the end, you can't just America in the end has to take care of itself. And what we should do is help these countries to maintain their own stability and their own forces, so that they have a thriving economy, and maybe they can help us one day in 25 years, as opposed to the U.S. taking the lead on all these things all the time.
Mr. Kimber, 30 seconds.
No.
Move to our next question from Mr. Lynn to Mr. Kimber.
All right. Now that Attorney General Eric Holder is stepping down, do you think that the Fast and the Furious investigation will continue, and what is your position on that issue?
I think the investigation will continue. Unfortunately, I think there's a term we use in the military called beat a dead horse. And it seems like a lot of members on these committees just continue to go after something. I don't dispute that this was wrong. I don't think it should have been done. But it seems like it's been asked and answered.
Mr. Hunter.
Fast and Furious, talk about beating a dead horse. Fast and Furious is over a dead U.S. Border Patrol. I mean, that's what it's about. And when you tie that into Eric Holder, I don't think Holder wants to be in office much longer once the new investigations start. I don't think it's going to change anything. I think this president's going to bring somebody on who's as partisan as he is and ideological as he is. I don't think it's going to change much. But him being gone takes him out of the limelight, and I'm sure Eric Holder will go get a nice cushy law job, making a few million bucks a year, and good for him. Glad he's gone.
Mr. Kimber, 30 seconds.
No.
We move on. Next question to Mr. Hunter from the audience. The Pentagon has officially proclaimed that climate change is of strategic concern to the United States. What do you think, if anything, should be done to address issues related to climate change?
Number one, the Pentagon needs to pull its head out of the sand. Okay? We don't have enough ships. We don't have enough ships. We don't have enough planes. We don't have enough F-22s. We don't have enough people. There are people getting out of the military right now because they're being forced out. But climate change is more dangerous than ISIS. Climate change is more dangerous than nuclear North Korea. Climate change is more dangerous than a nuclear Iran. Climate change is more dangerous than Pakistan. Baloney. This is an ideological partisan push by the administration within the Department of Defense. The military is there to fight and win wars, not play out some social experiment where we force the military to buy algae fuel, buy ships, buy rockets, buy missiles, buy what we need to do to win wars. Don't waste your money.
Mr. Kimber.
Okay, so to your comment about wasting money, we are wasting money in terms of the drought, record drought that we're suffering, the number of fires that we're having. I mean, look at the fires that have happened this year, Escondido, San Marcos, Julian, now the King Fire, and the fire department's already exhausted the amount of money that they use for these emergency services, so they're going to have to get more money, and I'm sure from the federal government. You're talking about a waste of money. Not addressing drought is going to result in a waste of money. You can ignore it all you want, but it's here. Ask the farmers. You live in a district that's heavily agriculture. Ask them what they think about the water drought situation. Ask the Farm Bureau. That's one of their number one issues right now. Now, I've talked to the Mount Helix Water Board as well as Padre Dam, and they're doing water recycling. And these things are – this is what some of the money needs to go to invest in. I don't deny that we need strong defense. We need planes. We need ships. But you can't deny climate change. You just can't do it.
Mr. Hunter, 30-second response.
Once again, Mr. Kimber didn't answer the actual question about the military saying that climate change is our number one threat, because it isn't. There is no answer to that, because climate change is not the number one threat. What I've done in Congress here in San Diego and in Southern California, we built reservoirs. We use federal dollars to build dams. We've done a whole lot on water storage and reclamation. You have desalinization plants going in Camp Pendleton and North County. We're doing a whole lot of stuff on water, and frankly, we're much better off than Central California is here in San Diego because of the steps that we've taken. But that doesn't mean that the U.S. military should take your taxpayer dollars that you're using to make sure that we remain a free country and protect our interests and allies and spend it on climate change in whatever way the DOD feels is the right way to do it. That's a misuse of taxpayer money, and they're wrong to do it.
Mr. Gentlemen, Kemper, 30 seconds.
I'm going to invoke my moderator's right to ask a couple follow-ups. First one is for Mr. Kemper. Do you have a plan that would address the issues and solve the problems of the droughts and making that go away? Can you describe what it is?
Well, to make it go away, no. I mean, but my plans and echo some of the things that Mr. Hunter's talked about doing. As I mentioned, I met with the different water boards, and one of the biggest things that they're doing, which will help, I think, dramatically, is the recycling of water. But right now, they're only recapturing about 50% of it, and there is this public perception that recycled water is not safe. I would say, just having been in the military on board a ship, that's what we do. I mean, some of the water is collected through desalinization, and I'm aware of the desal plant. But much of the water that we use for consumption is recycled water, and it is very safe. But we need to make the public more aware of this. In terms of ending the drought, I mean, I can't make it rain, so we just have to continue working on, I think, the recycling is the biggest effort in combination with the desalinization.
Mr. Hunter, 1 minute.
All right. So we have tried in the House of Representatives over and over and over to have San Francisco release the water that they have up there because it's dammed off for that little fish, the Delta smelt. You have an entirely dry Central California. Talk about farmers going out of business. It is dry now. There are signs saying, thank you, Pelosi, for the Dust Bowl as you drive through Central California, because Nancy Pelosi has created – there is an actual drought, but she has created a water shortage in what used to be the breadbasket of the United States, and it no longer is. It's dry because they care more about the Delta smelt than they do people, and I mean most Democrats do. That's why they destroy economies, and that's why you have a Dust Bowl system in Central California. And I mean Democratic policies.
My second follow-up is for you, Congressman. You mentioned that you don't believe that climate change is the largest threat the Pentagon should be worried about. Do you consider it to be a serious threat?
I think climate change is going to be happening. It was happening millions of years ago, and it's happening now. So let me give you an example. There is climate change. I don't dispute that. I think that the climate is changing, and I'm not saying that the weather's changing. I believe in actual climate change. The question is, are we the ones causing it? We live in a relatively cool time on Earth right now. When you look back millions of years, if you look back millions of years, we live in a relatively cool time. The temperatures on Earth before there were humans, on Earth have both been higher, much higher, and much lower than they are now. Humans,
I would please ask the audience to show respect or to go do something else tonight.
So the main question is there human-caused climate change? That I do not buy. Is the climate changing? Is it going to be getting colder during an ice age and warmer during a warmer period? Yes. But I don't think that we're the ones doing it.
Mr. Kemper.
So despite all the scientists that say to the contrary, you want to dispute what they have to say. I mean, it's... I work in neurosurgery. I'm a physician assistant, and I would just say, I mean, if 98 doctors tell you have a brain tumor and need surgery, you don't want to listen to the two that say don't. But that aside, okay, let's just say, for argument's sake, I'll agree with you, and just let's say it's cooler now than it ever used to be. What's wrong with taking steps towards addressing climate change, such as alternative energy, such as recycling water, recycling, getting electric cars, building these power stations for the electric cars? What's wrong with approaching that? These will provide jobs. They will create jobs. What's wrong with approaching it from that viewpoint if you just want to not believe in climate change?
Right. Next question comes from me to Mr. Kemper. Citizens United, good decision, bad decision?
Terrible.
with explanation, if you would, what should be done about it?
I think we've all seen, you know, the amount of money that's flowing in as a result of Citizens United has really, I can't think of a nice word to say how it's really tainted. Okay, I'll use that. Tainted the political system. It, you know, I hear this over and over how it's all about the money. And in, to some extent, I guess it is nowadays. I mean, you can go ahead and donate to certain PACs now, unlimited amounts, and without any identification of who's making these donations to some committees. And, you know, unlimited contributions are going into campaigns, and it seems that more and more are from corporations. I know, Mr. Hunter, a lot of your contributions come from the the committees that you sit on, such as the shipbuilding, some companies like that. Some of the defense industry are also big contributors in your campaign.
Mr. Hunter, 1 minute.
So I think it was the right decision. We live under the U.S. Constitution. People can believe in what they want to believe in, and they can spend as much money as they want to spend on what they believe in. How else do you have millionaires like the owner of Facebook and others doing these, putting tens of millions of dollars into their immigration pushes or their global climate change? You know, Leonardo DiCaprio puts in tens of millions of dollars towards his climate change stuff. You all think that that's fine. But when Republicans do it or conservatives do it, then it's bad, evil corporate money. Number one, Congress cannot take corporate money. Congress can't take corporate money. It's illegal. So at the same time, how do you get money out of the influence of politics but recognize that everybody has the right to do what they believe and spend money on what they believe in? I think that the Supreme Court had to make a decision. They made the right one. It'd be nice if there was some middle ground where you could spend as much as you want but not have that money influence the races in any bad way.
Mr. Kimber.
I would agree. And, you say that it's okay when it happens for Democratic, such as immigration reform or climate change, and I disagree. It's not okay there either. I think it should be a level playing field. I would take it away, and it should apply to both. I'm not singling out one party or the other as being the guilty. They're both culpable in this.
Yeah. Mr. Hunter?
Sure.
On a relatively agreeing note, we move into our final candidate statements. Before we do, I always like to tell audiences whenever I have the chance, I'm a professor, I'd like to talk, that we're here to promote civil discourse because, you know, civility, politics, if you go to the Greek word for it, is turning the poly, the many, into the polis, the community. And the Greeks used to consider those who pursued the good of the community to pursuing the highest good to be the most noble amongst themselves. I don't remember hearing a lot of people say that politicians are noble. When they are doing the work, the rest of us have not. I would like to say to both of our candidates, I really appreciate and honor the work you do, and I would like the audience to give them a nice round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you.
On that note, we will have 3-minute closing remarks followed by 30-second responses. As long as the candidates would like to do their 30-second responses or until our host asks us to leave. We begin with Mr. Hunter.
Hey, first off, thank you again. Thanks for doing this and taking time. And to all of you, whether obviously there's a few of you who may disagree with me, but thank you for being here too, because truly that's what this is all about. And the fact that you came out on a Friday, thank you for doing it. I want to thank my son and two daughters for being here. I have to go to all of your stuff, so now you have to come to my stuff. Mom, my mom's here, and my lovely wife is here. Thank you very much. And all of my friends and supporters, and those who don't, thank you very much for being here. You know, I said it in the very beginning, for our system of government to work, we have to be able to govern ourselves better than those who would wish to govern us can. That makes sense? Meaning we control our own destiny. We govern ourselves. The federal government does not know what you need. A one-size-fits-all federal plan, 3,000 pages or 5,000 pages of legislation, still doesn't know what you need as Americans. The way that we thrive in this country is we have the opportunity to do whatever we want to do within the bounds of good judgment, law, and order. That's what makes us entrepreneurs. That's what makes us go out and do amazing things. And it's because of regulation and that burdensome regulation and the unaccountability. because you can't hold me responsible anymore because all this stuff is being done by the Environmental Protection Agency. It's not Mr. Kimber. It's not me. It's these bureaucracies that are tearing down the American way. In California, it's the bureaucracies that are destroying commerce in the state. That's why you see business after business after business leaving California, because there's other states in which it's much easier and much more profitable to do business. That's because regulation kills. And we got to break out of that. We got to bring our corporate tax rate down, bring these countries back from China and India, get them back here in the U.S., make American goods, and then us Americans, we can go buy those American goods and make sure that our neighbors and our family have good jobs because there's manufacturing back in this country. The number one job, I think, the number one job that I have as a U.S. congressman is national security. That's it, because all of this other stuff, everything that we've talked about here, everything, from climate change to immigration, none of that matters if we get hit again like 9/11. None of that matters if we get hit again like 9/11. That is the federal government's number one job, is to make sure that the people in this country and our allies are safe from harm and that we don't get attacked and that we're not attacked overseas. I actually believe that the federal government has overstepped its bounds in almost everything that there is, but there are a few things that it does well, and that's one is national security, the other is transportation and infrastructure. We can build big bridges pretty well. The federal government can, because they're big jobs. Those are things that the federal government should be doing. What we should not be doing, education. Let the communities, let the families and the cities and the counties handle things that they where they know what is best for their citizens. Because there's people sitting back in D.C., they don't know. Thank you very much. Mr. Kimber, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. God bless y'all.
Mr. Kimber, 3 minutes.
Sure. I want to thank again our host Veterans Campaign, thank our moderators here, and again, Mr. Hunter, thank you for this opportunity. I want to thank the guests who have come here this evening that have supported me over the past few years. As never having been in elected office, most of you I've met for the very first time and never would have met otherwise if it had not been for this opportunity. I've met people, both Democrats, Republicans, and all have welcomed me, maybe not some as much as others, but I've really enjoyed the chance to get to know many of you, sit down and talk to you about what the issues are that bother you the most throughout this district that you live in. I agree with Mr. Hunter that the government is not here to tell you how to live your lives or to fix your problems. But those who are elected do have a job to do, and that's not an excuse for not doing the job. It's not an excuse for not addressing things such as climate change, for not addressing immigration reform, for not addressing health care. National security is absolutely paramount, but these other problems are not any less important. And I would like to work with you to help with these issues if I am elected. Again, just because government is not there to solve your problems doesn't mean that they shouldn't be doing the jobs that they were elected to do. Okay. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate everybody who came out this evening.
Seconds, if you'd like.
No, I think you finished very well.
Gentlemen, shake hands. Thank you all very much for coming tonight.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks so much. One last comment before we go. I just want to thank both of our participants tonight. Veterans Campaign's philosophy is that if we have more veterans getting involved in running for office and being involved in public service, that will lead to more civil discourse. And when I talked to my bosses about whether we should sponsor this debate, they said, yeah, well, what if it doesn't actually do that? And in this case, I want to thank both of you guys for really having a terrific debate on the issues, not agreeing on everything, but it certainly did not lead to ad hominem attacks, which we need less of, in D.C. these days.